So, in the middle of the Second World War, military engineers realized something that is just incredibly counterintuitive.
Oh, yeah, it really is.
Right, like they discovered that the absolute best way to destroy a heavily armored enemy tank wasn't with, some massive chemical explosion. It was basically just with a rock.
Literally just a solid chunk of material.
Yeah, exactly. A
Yeah.
material whose microscopic architecture just turned it into an unstoppable force of physics. But here is the paradox we are exploring today for you listening. That exact same unyielding material, the stuff they used to violently rip through solid steel.
Right, the exact same element.
It is the only reason you can flip a switch and watch a delicate, hair-thin filament gently illuminate a room.
It's wild. It really forces us to look at the world through a completely different lens because
Yep.
when you track a single element like this, you stop seeing history as just a sequence of dates or battles, you know?
Yeah, totally.
You start seeing it as a byproduct of atomic structure. Like the microscopic dictates the macroscopic. A shift at the atomic level just ripples out and shakes global conflicts, supply chains, and, well, the basic infrastructure of our daily lives.
So today we're doing a deep dive into this really fascinating stack of sources we have. We've got crystallographic data, historical mining records, and even notes from a very enthusiastic university lecture hall.
It's quite the mix.
It really is. And our mission is to trace this journey of tungsten. But to actually understand how tungsten shapes history or, breaks tank armor, we have to start at the absolute ground floor.
Right at the source.
Exactly. So the primary source of tungsten we're looking at here comes from a mineral called wolframite.
Right, and the notes detail its chemical formula as FeMmWO4. So we are looking at iron, manganese, tungsten, and oxygen all bound together.
Okay, got it.
But the ingredients, I mean, they're really only half the story here because the physical properties of any material are dictated by its architecture.
Like how they're built.
Right, exactly. How those specific atoms are physically stacked together in three-dimensional space. And wolframite utilizes a structure that crystallographers call a monoclinic lattice.
Yeah, and our source material actually provides the down to the decimal measurements of this
So we
lattice.
get very specific.
Super specific. It says the dimensions are recorded as A equaling 0.477 nanometers, B equaling 0.573, and C equaling 0.498. And then it specifies an angle, the beta angle of exactly 90.2 degrees, and all of this falls under space group P2C.
That's a lot of
Yeah, it
numbers.
is. So, okay, let's unpack this because I'm reading all this intense crystallographic data and I really need to know why we should care.
Fair enough.
Like, what does a 90.2 degree beta angle actually mean for the physical reality of this rock? Is it like looking at a microscopic 3D grid of building blocks that is just slightly leaning out of a perfect square?
That's actually a really good way to put it. Think about building a brick wall. If every single angle is a perfect 90 degrees, you get a very rigid, standard, completely predictable cube, right? But in wolframite's monoclinic lattice, that beta angle is 90.2 degrees. So it has this tiny, almost imperceptible lean.
Yeah.
The entire microscopic grid is just slightly skewed out of a perfect square.
Okay, so it's just tilted.
Yeah, just tilted. And because of that microscopic skew, the atoms don't just sit rigidly on top of one another, they actually nestle into the gaps created by that angle.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they pack together with just an astonishing level of efficiency.
So they're essentially eliminating empty space at the atomic level.
Exactly. They are minimizing the void space to an extreme degree. And when you pack that many heavy atoms into such a tightly confined architecture, well, the physical weight of the material just
Which
skyrockets.
brings us to like the most crucial number in our notes.
Right.
Wolframite and the tungsten extracted from it has a density of 19.3 grams per cubic centimeter.
It's incredibly dense.
Yeah, and just to put that 19.3 grams per cubic centimeter into perspective for you listening,
Huh.
water is about 1 gram per cubic centimeter.
Right.
Lead, the metal we literally instinctively associate with extreme weight, is about 11.3. So tungsten is nearly twice as dense as lead.
It's hard to even imagine.
It is. If you held a small block of tungsten in your hand, your brain would practically short circuit. It feels unnaturally heavy for its volume, like your eyes are lying to your muscles.
And that visceral physical reaction you're describing, that is the exact reason this material transitioned from just a geological curiosity into a geopolitical necessity.
It's because of the weight.
Because of that specific 19.3 density, which remember is born entirely from that slightly skewed monoclinic lattice. It literally forced human beings to radically alter their industrial processes.
Which takes us completely out of the microscopic ground, right? And drops us onto the rugged cliffs of Cornwall, England.
Quite a change of scenery.
Yeah. Because of that incredible density, this wasn't just, you know, a mineral for scientists to study in a lab anymore. It became a desperate necessity. Our sources highlight this very specific location, the Kligge Mine and Nobel's Munitions Factory.
Yeah, and the history of that Nobel's facility illustrates the massive wartime pivot perfectly.
Yeah, how so?
Well, as the name Nobel's heavily implies, this was a factory built from the ground up to manufacture explosives.
Right, things that go boom.
Exactly. The entire site was optimized for volatile chemical synthesis. The workforce, the safety protocols, the supply chain, everything was specifically designed to create chemical detonations.
But then the Second World War hits.
Yeah.
And the military realities on the ground completely change.
Mm.
So the focus at this specific site shifts entirely away from making explosives.
Right, they had to adapt.
Suddenly, extracting wolframite out of the Cornwall earth becomes their critical focus. It's like a factory pivoting from making the boom to making the punch.
I love that analogy.
They literally go from synthesizing chemical compounds to digging at mud.
Yeah. They had to entirely retrofit their industrial identity. To extract the tungsten, they utilized a system at the Kligge Head mine that centered around these massive settling tanks. Mm. And the notes describe these tanks as utilizing sedimentation to separate the relatively clear water from the mineral spoils.
Okay, but think about the pure logistical headache of this for a second.
Oh, it must have been a nightmare.
Right. You have a massive factory calibrated to make explosives, and suddenly the government tells you to stop making bombs because they desperately need this dense rock.
Yeah.
But why undergo the massive effort to build these settling tanks? Like, if you're digging it out of the ground, why not just smash the rock and pick the tungsten out?
Well, because wolframite doesn't come out of the earth in pure, shiny chunks, you know? When you mine it, especially in a coastal environment like Cornwall, you are dealing with this chaotic, muddy slurry of worthless burnt silica, water, and then the wolframite itself.
So it's all just mixed together in the mud.
Exactly. It's like a microscopic needle in a massive geological haystack. So you need a way to process thousands of tons of this slurry quickly to separate the valuable material from the useless spoils.
Which I'm guessing brings us right back to that 19.3 density number.
You guessed it. Let's connect the dots between the lattice and the industrial machinery here. Because tungsten is so unbelievably dense, it is drastically heavier than any of the surrounding rock or dirt or mud.
Okay, so they didn't need complicated chemicals.
No, they didn't need complex chemical separators at all. They just pumped this chaotic slurry into enormous settling tanks and simply let gravity do the work.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, the incredibly heavy wolframite just plummets to the bottom of the tank much faster than the lighter dirt and spoils, which, you know, remain suspended in the water for longer.
So the sedimentation process is literally just waiting for the heavy stuff to sink.
That's all it is.
They draw off the muddy water and lighter waste at the top, and they are left with a concentrated layer of heavy tungsten at the bottom.
Exactly. The physical property of the mineral completely dictated the industrial process they used to extract it. Gravity was just the only tool powerful enough to sort it efficiently at that scale.
That's brilliant.
But, you know, the real question is why a nation fighting for its survival would redirect a perfectly good explosives factory just to wash mud.
Right. And that brings us to what the enemy was driving on the battlefields of Europe.
The tanks.
Yeah. By the time of the Second World War, the whole nature of conflict had changed. Cavalry and infantry lines were replaced by mechanized warfare. The battlefield was dominated by heavy tanks and heavily armored vehicles.
And standard chemical explosives were suddenly really struggling to make a dent in that armor.
Yeah, our source material notes that this newly extracted tungsten was utilized in two distinct ways to counter that exact threat. The first was defensive.
Right.
They plated their own armor with tungsten to drastically increase the survivability of their vehicles. But the second application, the offensive one, was the development of specialized shells capable of penetrating ordinary armor.
Yeah, and the notes refer to these as kinetic energy projectiles.
Here's where it gets really interesting. When we think of an artillery shell, we usually picture, like, a massive bomb flying through the air that smashes into a tank and explodes in a fireball, right?
Like, that's the Hollywood version, yeah.
But a kinetic energy projectile is completely different. Wait, so it doesn't even need to explode to do damage? It just uses its sheer mass and speed.
Exactly. The destruction is entirely mechanical. There is no explosive payload hidden in the tip of the shell. It is pure physics operating at terrifying velocities.
Okay, let me try to visualize the mechanics of this. Imagine you are standing in an empty room, right, facing a standard plaster wall.
Okay, I'm with you.
In your right hand, you have a hollow ping pong ball.
Huh?
And in your left hand, you have a solid, heavy bowling ball.
Oh.
If you wind up and throw that ping pong ball at the wall as hard as you can, it might make a loud noise, but it's just going to bounce right off.
It won't do much, yeah.
But if you throw the solid bowling ball at the exact same speed, it's going to punch a massive hole straight through the plaster. The speed is identical, but the sheer mass behind the bowling ball makes it unstoppable.
So I am actually going to push back on that analogy just slightly.
Oh, really? Why?
Because it misses the core secret of why tungsten is so devastating. I mean, a bowling ball carries more mass than a ping pong ball, yes, but it is also vastly larger in size.
Oh, right. True.
Tungsten's advantage isn't just mass. It is density. Remember the lattice. It is packing an insane amount of mass into a tiny volume.
Okay, so what's a better way to picture it?
A better way to picture it is holding a standard golf ball in one hand and a solid lead sphere of the exact same size in the other.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, if you throw them both at the same speed, the volume striking the wall is identical, but that lead sphere carries a devastating amount of mass behind its small surface area.
Ah, okay. So it's not about making the projectile bigger. It's about concentrating the weight so it hits a tiny surface area on the enemy tank with just unimaginable force.
Exactly. And the physics of this are governed by the kinetic energy equation. 1/2 times mass times velocity squared.
Okay, getting into the math.
Just a little bit. Hmm. To increase the destructive energy of a weapon, you can either make it go faster or you can increase its mass. Tungsten, with its 19.3 density, packs an extraordinary amount of mass into a really small aerodynamic dart.
So when that incredibly dense tungsten dart, traveling at thousands of feet per second, actually hits standard steel tank armor, what actually happens mechanically?
Well, if you fire a lighter steel shell at heavy tank armor, it might just shatter on impact or just deflect off the angled surface.
Right, because it doesn't have the mass.
It lacks the mass to force its way through the atomic bonds of the steel plate, but a solid dart of tungsten carries so much concentrated kinetic energy that the steel armor simply cannot absorb or deflect the force.
Just fails.
Yeah, the tungsten punches straight through the hull, and the terrifying reality of this is a process called spalling.
Spalling? What is that?
The kinetic energy is so violent that as the tungsten breaches the hull, it sends shockwaves through the tank's armor, causing the inside layer of the steel plate to shatter and literally flake off at supersonic speeds.
Oh my God! It turns the tank's own armor into deadly shrapnel inside the crew cabin.
Exactly. The tank basically becomes its own worst enemy. The microscopic structure we discussed earlier literally determines the survival of the crew inside.
That is wild.
Yeah. The side with superior access to tungsten had a measurable, distinct advantage in penetrating armor. That is the strategic reality that forced the Kliga mine to abandon explosives and build settling tanks. They needed to weaponize density.
It is a sobering realization, honestly, about how elements dictate the brutal math of war.
It really is.
We've traced tungsten from its skewed lattice to the mud of Cornwall, and finally to the terrifying physics of a kinetic penetrator. But what makes this deep dive truly fascinating is that our source material now takes us completely away from the battlefields.
Yeah, a total shift in tone here.
We leave the mud and the destruction behind, and we find ourselves looking at a totally civilian application in an academic setting.
We shift our focus to a completely different facet of tungsten, documented in a much, much quieter environment.
Right. Our notes detail an undergraduate project at the University of Sheffield. It was conducted by a student named Matthew Peet, and the project was titled Case Study on Tungsten Filament Lamps.
Yes, and Peet's report includes a comprehensive discussion of the manufacture of tungsten filament lamps, an exploration of the intricate physics involved in creating light, and even an analysis of alternative light sources.
And there's a detail in the notes that I absolutely love.
What's that?
Peet mentions that this project was taught, and this is a quote, with great enthusiasm by Professor G.W. Greenwood.
It is a wonderful historical contrast.
It really highlights a profound paradox, doesn't it? I mean, what does it say about a material that it can inspire both a frantic munitions factory pivot in wartime and great enthusiasm from Professor G.W. Greenwood in the University of Sheffield lecture hall?
It just speaks to the sheer versatility of fundamental physics. Because when you read the notes from Pete's report alongside the history of the kinetic shells, you realize that Prefect Greenwood's enthusiasm is rooted in the exact same physical extremes.
Right, they're not actually unrelated.
Not at all. To understand the manufacture of a tungsten filament, you have to grapple with the exact same unyielding nature of the metal that made it so valuable to the military.
Okay, let me make sure I'm connecting this correctly. We established that the density of tungsten comes from that slightly skewed monoclinic lattice packing the atoms tightly together.
Right, correct.
So does that tight packing also stop it from melting when you run an electrical current through it? Is that how the light bulb works?
So that is a very common misconception, actually.
So brilliant.
Yeah, we tend to conflate density and melting point because they both feel like measures of, you know, toughness.
Right, they seem like the same thing.
But they are driven by entirely different microscopic mechanisms. Gold, for instance, is actually slightly denser than tungsten, but it melts at a relatively low temperature.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
Yeah. The density comes from the lattice packing. But tungsten's incredibly high melting point, which is actually the highest of all discovered metals, comes from its electron configuration.
Okay, so what are the electrons doing differently in tungsten?
Well, tungsten is a transition metal, and it possesses a specific arrangement of what chemists call 5B electrons.
5B electrons.
Yeah, and in tungsten, these electrons form incredibly strong directional covalent bonds between the adjacent atoms and the lattice. You can almost think of it as an ultra-strong atomic glue.
Atomic glue. I like that.
The atoms aren't just sitting tightly next to each other. They are gripping each other with immense electrostatic force.
And that grip is what makes the light bulb possible. Because when you run an electrical current through any wire, you're basically forcing electrons through a tight space.
Right.
And that creates friction, and that friction generates an enormous amount of heat.
Exactly. And if you tried to run that much electrical current through a hair-thin wire of copper or standard steel, well, the heat would easily overcome the bonds holding the metal together.
It would just melt.
The atoms would vibrate apart, the metal would melt, and the wire would snap instantly. The bulb would burn out in a fraction of a second.
But because of that ultra-strong atomic glue, those 5B electrons' tungsten simply refuses to let go.
It holds its structural integrity under extreme thermal stress. It gets white hot, reaching temperatures of thousands of degrees.
Wow.
It literally glows with thermal radiation, providing the brilliant light we see, but the atomic bonds do not break.
That's amazing.
So the military relied on the density of the lattice to punch through steel, while the civilian engineers relied on the electron bonds to burn bright without melting.
It is literally the exact same piece of rock dug out of the Cornwall mud. But its unique microscopic properties are being exploited for two wildly different human endeavors.
Yeah.
One relies on its mass for destruction. The other relies on its thermal resilience for elimination.
And that is precisely why a professor at Sheffield would teach it with such great enthusiasm, you know? It is a masterpiece of material science.
It truly is.
Whether you're studying it to find alternative light sources or to calculate kinetic energy transfer, you are marveling at the exact same immutable laws of nature.
Let's take a step back and look at the entire journey we have been on today.
It's been quite a trip.
We started this deep dive looking at a scale so small it is almost impossible to visualize. We examined wolframite and its slightly tilted 90.2 degree monoclinic lattice. And we explored how its 5B electron glue holds it all together.
Right. And we saw how that specific microscopic geometry dictates a staggering physical density of 19.3 grams per cubic centimeter, creating a material that is impossibly heavy and incredibly resilient.
Then we zoomed out to see how that physical reality forced entire industries to adapt. We traveled to the Kliga mine, watching a munitions factory completely halt its chemical operations, building massive settling tanks just so they could let gravity pull that heavy, valuable tungsten out of the chaotic slurry.
And then we explored the brutal mechanics of kinetic energy projectiles.
Correcting my ping pong ball analogy along the way.
To understand how concentrated density, not just mass, allowed a solid dart to punch through armor and weaponize the tank's own steel against it.
And finally, we ended up in a quiet lecture hall at the University of Sheffield, where that exact same unyielding toughness was celebrated not for its ability to destroy, but for its ability to hold a fragile, glowing current.
It is a brilliant reminder that the massive historical shifts we read about and the modern comforts we enjoy every evening are all anchored to the invisible rules of chemistry.
It really makes you think differently about the objects around you.
Actually, I want to leave you, the listener, with a final thought to mull over regarding exactly that.
Go for it.
We navigate our lives surrounded by manufactured goods, rarely thinking about the atomic reality of what they actually are. The next time you flip a switch on an older incandescent lamp, or you walk past a massive piece of heavy industrial machinery, pause for a second.
Just a second to appreciate it.
Think about how an invisible architecture, a lean of just 0.2 degrees in a crystalline lattice, and the grip of a few specific electrons dictate the entire destiny of a material.
Wow.
That microscopic configuration alone decides whether an element is fated to gently illuminate your living room or violently tear through solid steel. It challenges you to look closer at the hidden dual nature of the everyday materials all around us.
The universe really is built on some incredibly small, profoundly important details. It has been an amazing journey tracing this one material from the mud to the light bulb. Thanks for taking this deep dive with us.